Do you want to just field the questions?
Yes.
Yourself. Okay. Some of the chair, I'm going to get the first one. I want you to explain, if you could, what is this ISIS thing, ISIS, and what is its relationship to the forces that we were aware of during the Iraq War, when we knew all the different parties and the different pieces to the conflict and all that? Where do they fit into that background?
I just want to say one thing about the BDS, the boycott announcement. There is actually a really good app for those in the audience who like apps. It's called the Boycott. It's B-U-Y-C-O-T-T. And you can actually join the campaign for boycotting Israel on the app. And if you if you're shopping, you can just scan any barcode, and it will tell you if this product is linked to any company that is benefiting from the occupation. So it's a very smart project. There are hundreds of thousands of people who are involved in it so far. And if you have time to download it, buy a smartphone if you don't have one. So let me answer Paul's question about what is ISIS. Paul's question makes it sound like it's like some sort of food, or it's as I call it, it's the flavor of the month of a terrorist organization. You know, we have all of these new phenomena that pop out of nowhere in Iraq and in the region. You know, organizations that we've never heard of before. No one has voted for them. We don't know a single name affiliated with the organization. And then they just become a superpower out of nowhere. Like, no one says who's funding them, who's training them, who's supporting them. So there are so many suspicious groups like this that will exist in countries with no self-defense, like Iraq now, or Syria, in Palestine. Intelligence agencies around the world, they don't just gather intelligence, They do other stuff. And, you never know, how to prove what is what, but some of these things are suspicious, an organization that pops out of nowhere in Iraq, that takes over 35% of Iraq's territory in 3 days, using, a couple hundred pickup trucks. And I have some question marks about that. They defeated an army that has been funded with tens of billions of dollars of weapons, and that army just disappeared without firing any bullets. It's a weird story, So there are some question marks about how legitimate this organization, the Islamic State, is, where it came from, which intelligence services are supporting it, whether they are international or regional. But sometimes there are legitimate groups that start with some grassroots component, but they get manipulated by the powers to be and by intelligence services, by giving them more resources, by destroying all of their enemies. So let me give you a little bit an example about the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq. It changed its name lately from ISIS to only IS. So they rebranded. Actually, it felt bad. There was an American company that works on, like, some consultation company called ISIS. They had to change their name a couple of weeks ago. I hope they didn't change it to IS. That would be a disaster. So ISIS is a group that split from Al-Qaeda in Syria a couple of years ago. They said, we don't want to be affiliated with Al-Qaeda anymore. We want to be a group on our own. They were led by this Chechen guy who came out of nowhere with a bunch of other Chechens who crossed to Syria, very well armed. The Wall Street Journal goes on this investigative piece to find out who the guy is, the one who was leading ISIS at that time. It used to be called the Islamic State in Syria, and then they expanded to Syria and Iraq. So they track him back in Chechnya, and they have this story about him, about how he was radicalized, became a terrorist, and went to Syria. They have this like very side mention about how before he left, he used to be a member of the intelligence services. They have a picture of him in his official army outfit before he had the beard and after he had the beard. The Wall Street Journal doesn't really draw any question marks about the, you know, the reason why this Russian intelligence service guy becomes a leader of a major terrorist organization in Iraq. It's a very weird story for me, you know. Like, why would he go there? What's the connection with the Russian intelligence, right? So he goes there. They announce that they want to have an Islamic caliphate. Is that what they call it in English? Caliphate? Caliphate. Which is, it's one of these things that, like, Islamophobes like to, you know, promote a lot. I've heard more about the Islamic caliphate from Fox News than from any religious Muslim. Because Muslims want to take over the world and have this caliphate, right? So these people come and they're like an Islamophobia poster kids, you know? They look all crazy, they're like, they start this caliphate in Syria. And they say, we actually don't want to fight against the Syrian regime. We just want to have our establish our caliphate here. They start fighting with Syrian opposition groups. So in the last 2 years, the Islamic State and in Iraq and Syria killed almost 6,000 Syrian opposition fighters. And how many Syrian soldiers did they kill? Around zero. In that area of zero, maybe 10, by mistake. So they stand there in this very suspicious location inside Syria, attacking other opposition groups and not attacking the regime. The Syrian regime withdraws from the main oil field, according to the Independent, and hands it over to the Islamic State and starts buying oil for cash from the Islamic State in Iraq. Why would any... So that's what I'm saying. Maybe the Islamic State, people who are there, are actually legitimate terrorists. Legit, you know. But they are being manipulated by Russia and Syria. Maybe they are, you know, created by them. But either way, there are some really suspicious connections between them and the Syrian regime and the Russian government. These connections have never been explained. And they might explain how they can come overnight and take over larger pieces of land. Politically, they are even more suspicious than their military and logistical presence. Politically, Sunnis in Iraq have never had a Sunni separatist voice. Iraqi Shiites had a strong Shiite separatist voice. The Shiite separatist voice came from Iran. People who are Iraqi Shiites who do not want to be a part of Iraq. They want to secede and create an independent state in the south of Iraq or become a part of, you know, whatever, another country. Iraqi Kurds have an extremely strong separatist sentiment and voice. Iraqi Sunnis never had a strong separatist agenda. So this organization that comes out of nowhere, it fills that gap beautifully. They come to Iraq, they say, we want to create a Sunni state, like in this area, you know, in the middle, that no one has been pushing for. So it made it way more convenient for other separatist groups, Kurdish separatist groups and other Shia separatist groups, to say, you see, now all of us want to separate. The Kurdish parliament, the day after ISIS took over Mosul, passed a resolution to start working on a referendum for complete secession from Iraq. Because they said, that's it, you see? There are some Sunnis who want to secede. It normalizes our aspirations for secession. So we're not being anti-Iraqi or anything. Everyone wants that. So the size of the group is really suspicious. I personally haven't figured out where they're coming from, but I know as a fact that they are too well organized to just happen in a week, you know. These things don't happen, you know. They're funded and they're created. At the same time, there are other groups that jumped on the wave. After the Iraqi government collapsed in the six provinces, who are the ones that we refer to as the Sunni provinces now, other Iraqi groups stood up. And these include former Iraqi government officials. Saddam Hussein's vice president, Izzat al-Duri, became a public figure again. He came with his strong, very well-trained and armed militia back to the streets. They put pictures of Saddam Hussein and the Ba'ath Party. So they're back in the game. Some of the groups that fought against the U.S. Military occupation, the Islamic Army, Muhammad's Army, Al-Mujahideen Army, some other smaller groups, Naqshbandiya, they all came back to the picture and started taking control over different parts of the areas that fell out of the control of the Iraqi central government. So in a way, what's going on in Iraq, or what was going on in Iraq in the last month, is similar to what happened in Syria 2 years ago, where there was an Islamic State, and there are many other smaller, more moderate opposition groups who are linked to the population. And many people were asking me, what do you think will happen next? I said what will happen next is that the Islamic State will start colliding with Iraqi opposition groups. That's what they did in Syria. In Syria, they didn't really end up fighting against the regime. They spent all of their time and energy fighting against other Iraqi opposition groups. And this is happening now. So clashes just started in the last couple of days between the Islamic State and other groups who are, you know, less extreme or, you know, less fanatic than the Islamic State in Iraq. Anyway, so it's a very complicated map, I think, when you look at it. But many of these groups who don't have names or affiliation known to the public, we have no idea. I mean, I can speak for hours about what I, you know, guess, like my speculations of who they are. There isn't like a press office of ISIS that you can walk into and see their funding resources or like ask them about their names, or there isn't. It's a complete vague operation that no one can answer it. So that's why I think many people rely on analysis and trying to figure out who are these new groups and what are they doing and whose interest is being served by bringing up these extremist visions that never existed in Iraq or the Muslim world before. Do you have a question in the back?
I was just wondering the name of the app you were talking about before.
Oh, it's Boycott. It's not Boycott, it's Boycott. It's B-U-Y-Cott.